Srila Prabhupada, Sri Bhakti Vedanta Ki, Granta Raj, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Kiriraj Maharaj Ki, Go Premanandi. So tonight we will continue chapter 68. What is chapter 68 called?
Marriage of Sambha.
Marriage of Sambha. And tonight we'll go from verses 14 to 26. Okay. Lord Balaram, however, cooled the tempers of the Vrishni heroes, who had already put on their armor. He who purifies the age of quarrel did not want a quarrel between the Kurus and Vrishnis. Thus, accompanied by Brahmanas and family elders, he went to Hastinapur on his chariot, which was as effulgent as the sun. As he went, he appeared like the moon, surrounded by the ruling planets. So the way it is written here, it says, he who purifies the age of quarrel. So of course, Kali Yuga has not officially begun at this point. It's only a few years away. Everyone knows it's about to come. Well, they know it's the Sandhya, or the changing of the ages. So everyone is aware that Kali Yuga is about to begin. It hasn't actually started, but when you get close to this Sandhya, close to the in between, then you can feel the effects which are taking place. It's not like one begins then suddenly the next one. It's all different. It's like a gradual process. So just like yesterday was Radhashtami. But according to the Jyotish, it was Sankranti. So it means the sun changes from Leo to Virgo yesterday. So funny day astrologically. You know, auspicious because it's Radharani's appearance, but from an astrological point of view, it's a Sandhya. Sandhya means a Sankranti, or like a meeting place. So at those times, things can become a little difficult. So there is only one remedy for all the problems in the material world. The longer you stay in the material world, the more you realize it is full of problems. Does anyone know what I'm talking about here tonight? Okay, so yeah, some of you are exempt. Some of you are transcendental. Some of you are beyond the modes of material nature. But for those of us who are not, we are suffering here in this material world. That is the nature of the material energy. And there is only one answer. We have to take shelter of those personalities who can relieve the suffering of the age. So here specifically mentions Lord Balaram, or Nityananda Prabhu, who is non-different. So because the age of quarrel, that is the nature of this age of Kali. It is described as the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. Yeah. So wherever you look, there is hypocrisy. It's everywhere now. Yeah. It's just like a continuous pastime in this age. Everything has to be hypocrisy. Even amongst the devotees, it's there. Sometimes you see the devotees acting in ways they should not act. So hypocrisy is everywhere. It's the influence of this age, of Kali. And then the other quality of this particular age is quarrel. Always there is conflict. At the smallest stimulation of quarrel, then everyone just... So we have to learn to resist the urge to quarrel with others. In order to resist the urge to quarrel, you have to become situated in sattva gun. the mode of goodness. Because as long as you're influenced by the mode of passion and ignorance too much, you will quarrel with others. You know? And we see that's the nature. Someone insults you and immediately, if you retaliate immediately, then you know that you're under the influence of the lower modes of nature. You know that you're influenced by tamaguna and rajaguna. If you can resist responding when someone insults you, then you know that you're becoming more situated in the mode of goodness. So we have to learn that process. So here it is described that Lord Balaram, he purifies this age. So that is the only way to become free from the influence of the age of quarrel. You have to take shelter of those who are beyond its influence. And Lord Balaram is the head of the Vaishnavas, because he is the supreme personality of
servitor
Godhead. He teaches us how to serve. So every guru, now Prabhupada himself and all of the gurus are representatives of Lord Balaram, Lord Nityananda. And it is by their influence that the symptoms of the age of Kali, the age of quarrel, they are overcome. So Lord Balaram, he wants to stop the quarrel. And this is something we have to learn how to do. Because Maya is very insidious, Maya is very tricky, Maya is very clever. She knows how to cause dissension, even amongst the devotees. So when you see something arising, you have to learn to resist it. Because it's very easy to fall into Maya's influence. No? And that is, when quarrels erupt between the devotees, that's Maya trying to stop the preaching. That's why she does it. And if we allow ourselves to get drawn into it, then we're under that influence. Sometimes you see, like a quarrel begins to manifest between yourself and someone else. There's some altercation which is there. So you have to learn to resist it, not to let it grow, but rather to address it immediately and try to extinguish it as quickly as possible. Even I'm seeing just in the last 3-4 days, my wife, her service is, she's the national CPO officer, so child protection officer. But then there's something which is coming up, and it's caught, and because I hear her conversations when she's discussing, I can see there's like a quarrel beginning to manifest among some of the devotees. And I can see that at least one of the devotees, they're going to allow it to happen. Now, it's quite obvious what's going on, but instead of stopping it and resisting the urge to go into a quarrel, instead of reconciling it, they're allowing it to take place. And then it will damage relationships. That's the problem. So this is the influence of the age of Kali. So we have to resist that. Prabhupada said, when you come into the temple should be like Satyayuga. It should not feel like Kali Yuga. No, it should feel different. It should feel peaceful. The nature of the age of Satya is that everything was peaceful and very harmonious. So that should be like that. We should have that feeling, that influence, which is that. So Lord Balaram, he is purposely going to stop the quarrel, which is erupting. So he's teaching us, the guru. And we should be like that. If you see quarrel between devotees, then you should try to influence it, if you can, in a positive way to stop the quarrel, to stop the devotees from arguing. Sometimes I see devotees arguing, and I say, hey, come, let's have a talk. So you bring the two parties and say, okay, what is the problem, what is the problem? By the process of mediation, just like in ISKCON, we have one department called ISKCON Resolve. You all know about that? Hands up if you know about ISKCON Resolve. Okay, we're all in ISKCON and we don't know about ISKCON Resolve. This is good. It's actually shows. It's in our movement. There's a whole department, ISKCON Resolve. It's an ombuds department in ISKCON. So if there are quarrels between devotees, then you can report it to the national sorry, the international body, and then they'll delegate people to mediate so that you can come to some reconciliation like that. So it's there, it's in ISKCON, it's available. Devotees can use it if they need to. You know, but the wonderful thing is no one knows about it, so that's shows the situation in the age. We don't even know that we have these facilities which are there. So I was trained a number of years ago in the process of mediation by Brajabihari Prabhu, who was in charge. He did a course here a number of years ago. So then, it's a very good skill to have, mediation. Because if you learn the skill, then you learn to communicate with others in such a way that you can diffuse the quarrel, which is there. And it's a practical way of dealing with it. Brajabihari Prabhu, when he started this service, he's a disciple of Burujan Prabhu. Then he went to the GBC meetings, and he presented in front of the GBC, and then he said, we should start this Ombuds ministry, ISKCON Resolve. And then he said to the GBC, he said, hands up, how all of you, all the GBC were there. He said, how much of your time is spent just dealing with conflicts between devotees and different temples and different parties and like that, right? And they all put up their hand. I can't remember what the figure was, but it was something like, it was a significant figure. You know, 70% or something. 70% of everyone's, all the manager's time is just dealing with conflicts and so forth. So that's why I said, wouldn't it be good if we had a way to have a resolution for all of this? So the basic principle, and that's what I learned when I studied that course, is that when there's a conflict, first thing you have to do is listen to the opposing party. So you don't even have to have a third mediator necessarily if you know the process. The process is you just come with another devotee, you say, what is the problem? They speak, you listen, you do not interrupt. And that's the problem, that's why there are quarrels in the age of Kali. Because before someone can even finish saying what they're trying to say, the other person begins to. Interrupt. You can't even finish what you're saying, and then the other person begins to interrupt, and it becomes very difficult, and then the quarrel starts. So the first thing we need to do is to listen. And if you look at any manager, Stephen Covey, any of the big managers, you know, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, everyone, they all say the same thing. First you listen, right? Bhaktivedanta Swami, everyone says the same thing, right? Just listen, right? And then find out what the problem is. Brinda, you have to get settled, otherwise I can't concentrate. Find out what the problem is, right? And once you understand the problem, right, then you can continue. Like that. So there needs to be the ability to listen. And the only way you can do that is if you're in the mode of goodness. Yeah. Because in the mode of passion and mode of ignorance, you can't listen. Because when you listen, people are going to tell you your faults. Right? So you have to be situated in the mode of goodness in order to be able to hear your faults and not react and not respond. Right? And then once they've heard, then you will speak. And then you come to some reconciliation between the two. That's the situation. So Lord Balaram is going there to try to solve the problem. And then we'll see what happens in the past. So, any points?
Do we have any cases of this omniverse and resolve cases?
Resolve cases? Yeah, hundreds.
Is it like a website somewhere?
Yeah, ISKCON Resolve. ISKCON. Yeah. ISKCON Resolve, that's what it's called. Any other points?
You mentioned that in the age of quarrel, you know, we're supposed to tolerate when people are basically saying something rather than sort of, you know, the natural response is you tend to say something and do something. But isn't it sort of like because of the time, place, and circumstances, nowadays we have to respond rather than sort of like a retaliate back? Devotees, we have to sort of use that backing out thing. But in outside world, if we are sort of like just, you know, being Mr. Nice Guy, I think everyone will walk all over us.
Yeah, but the point is that you have to conduct yourself like a gentleman in the mode of goodness. Yeah, Prabhupada didn't let people walk over him. But the same way, he conducted himself in a very in a proper way. But, you know, same thing, Prabhupada, if people would yell at Prabhupada, Prabhupada would yell back. He wasn't sentimental either. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes people would yell at him and he would yell back at them. You know, over business and money and transactions and all that stuff. So you have to do what you have to do. But still, a bit within yourself, you have to maintain the platform of the mode of goodness. That's the point. So, any other points? Okay. Upon arriving at Hastinapur, Lord Balaram remained in a garden outside the city and sent Uddhava ahead to probe King Dhritarashtra's intentions. Okay. Jagannath Ram Prabhu.
Prabhupada writes, when Lord Balaram reached the precincts of the city of Hastinapur, he did not enter but stationed himself in a camp outside the city in a small garden house. Then he asked Uddhava to see the leaders of the Kuru dynasty and inquire from them whether they wanted to fight with the Yadu dynasty or to make a settlement.
Any points?
It's a general management principle that conflicts must be avoided as much as possible. We have to follow that even at workplace all the time. We have to settle everything peacefully. Then it escalates, then we can't do much. It has to go to the right authority. Right or wide.
Any other point? Even Adolf Hitler. You've heard of Hitler? Very famous. One of the most famous people in history. If someone in his ministry or his army, like in his officers, if they had a complaint against someone else, he would not allow them to lodge the complaint for 24 hours. In other words, you had to sit on it for 24 hours before you could even write your complaint. Which means you would calm down a little bit. So it was very good. He was a very good manager in many ways. So that was the system. So, once again, learning to avoid conflict. Conflict is always the last option. And that's, we know from the teachings of the Vedas. The Kshatriya, he can act in four ways. What is it? Sama?
Veda?
Dan? Danda. Danda is always last. Danda means conflict. That means that you will come in very heavy. That's always the last thing. Sometimes danda is first. You know, even we do it sometimes. You know, come in first, like very heavy. But that's not the first way to do it. First is you try to pacify and compromise. Right? And if that can't be reached, then you go to the next level. Then finally we'll come to danda, which means being very strict or very heavy. So here, we are seeing that this is the last option. And you see in the battle of Kurukshetra, it was the same thing. Right? Krishna's last option was the battle. He tried to avoid the battle under all circumstances. And when the battle could not be avoided, then finally they went to war. But that should always be the last option. So Lord Balaram is trying to just work things out very peacefully. But we'll see what takes place. It's an interesting pastime, how it all manifests. But in our own lives, this is what we should draw from the Bhagavatam. Right? Conflict should always be the very last thing. You know, if there's no other option, then maybe you have to get very forceful, very heavy, like that. But we have to learn the other options first. In other words, we have to be respectful in our dealings with all the other personalities that we deal with. And in that way, then things will go on harmoniously as much as possible. So, any points?
They're not that important. If we are able to implement that in our lives, then I think we can avoid conflict.
Good. Anything else?
Usually conflicts happen between peers. It rarely happens with juniors. With seniors, it rarely could happen. But usually with peers. So, and the principle of philanthropy submission, it is definitely right principle, no doubt, but it's very difficult to follow with peers. So, because the mentality is that I'm a peer, not a junior. Because the Trinadapi Sanchana expects one to subordinate oneself in front of everyone. That is a good principle, but difficult. Not easy in all circles.
Actually, my Guruji says on that, when you have a conflict with people who are senior or someone, first, you should know what your position is, where you are, and then try and see where you stand between the conflict and the person who you are in conflict with. Then decide how you're going to resolve, whether you're going to be doing it in a suggesting manner, or are you arguing, or are you challenging?
Anything else? Okay. After he had offered proper respects to the son of Ambika, Dhritarashtra, and to Bhishma, Drona, Palika, and Duryodhan, Uddhava informed them that Lord Balaram had arrived. So, Jamuna Lila, what's
Rila? Srila Ishwana Chakravarti points out that there is no reference here to Uddhava offering respects to Yudhishthira and his associates, since at that time the Pandavas were staying in Indraprastha.
Any points? So what takes place? There is proper
Proper etiquette is being followed by
the one,
even though the situation is
tense. Yeah, proper etiquette. It's called sadacha. Sadacha means proper behavior, the way devotees should behave. Right? So, as devotees, we have to learn how to behave properly with others. It is called sadacha. Actually, Lila, you can't write on that desk. Because that's actually Prabhupada's desk. And also, we can't even keep things on there. So if anyone's got their bags or anything. Yeah, it's Prabhupada's desk, so you can't write on the desk. And so, although these chairs and that, we can't sit on the chairs. Because they're, you know, Prabhupada's chairs. So sadacha means proper behavior. And I remember many years ago I was listening to a lecture by Bhakti Vijayapurna Swami, who lives in Mayapur, and he's very expert when it comes to etiquettes in devotional service. And he was describing that if there's ever a conflict in any relationship amongst devotees, it means there is a breaking of etiquette. That's why there is a conflict. If there's any friction in our lives, in any relationship, that means the etiquette is being broken. That means one of the parties or both of the parties do not understand the proper etiquette, or they don't understand the position of the other person properly. So it can happen in any relationship. It means that when we don't understand how the other person stands in relationship to us, in other words, we have to understand who is superior to us, who is inferior, who is equal. And if you don't understand those things, that's when conflict arises, because it means the etiquette is not being followed properly. It means there is it means the friction is arising because we don't understand how the dynamics of that particular relationship. So if you analyze like right now in your life, you know, probably everyone in this room, probably you have some friction in some relationship. Is it there? Or hands up if you don't have any friction in any relationship. So, okay, so you don't have any friction.
No, I don't
have. Oh, you always have. Okay. So, if you always have. Right. So, if you always have friction, that means we don't understand the dynamics of the relationship. Okay, if you're dealing with non-devotees, that can be a different thing. Because the non-devotees don't really understand properly how to act. So then there may be almost under all circumstances. And almost, it doesn't matter what you do sometimes, there's always going to be a problem. But at least amongst the devotees, we should understand. So if you think amongst the devotees, if you're having some friction or there's some problem with a particular devotee in the relationship, it means either you or the other devotee or both of you don't understand the dynamic in the relationship properly. So you have to follow the etiquettes. And one of the key features, which we've mentioned many times over the years, one of the key features of Vedic culture is respect for superiors. It's very heavily embedded in the culture. And even what we call Indian culture these days, all of you are Indian bodied. You know, I'm not, I'm kind of external to it, I'm learning it by association with, you know, with yourselves. But it's very much embedded in your culture. There's such a respect for superiors. You see in many of the Indian body devotees, there's so much respect for the senior members of the family and senior people and like that. It's just embedded in the culture. Right, and it's a necessary part of the culture. It's one of the key elements of the Vedic civilization. And when we don't offer proper respect to anyone according to the level of the relationship, that's when the friction will come. So sometimes we don't offer proper respect to our superiors. Sometimes we don't act compassionately enough to those who are junior to us or inferior. And sometimes amongst our peers, our friends, we just don't have the right dynamic of respect and love. Dadati pratigrinati, that those six principles of loving exchange, they're not being followed, and then problems arise. So it means that we don't understand the etiquettes. So Uddhava, when he came, what did he do? He understood. Okay, here are my superiors. Right, there's Bhishma. Who else is there? Drona and Dhritarashtra, right? These are senior people. They're elders of the dynasty. So automatically he offers respect. Right? And by offering that respect, then everyone becomes satisfied. That's the situation. Right? So we have to learn that in our relationships. If you see friction, then you have to learn to do that. So here we're seeing that Uddhava is showing the proper observance of etiquette. And it specifically mentions, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, he doesn't offer respect to Yudhisthira because Yudhisthira is in Indraprastha. At this point in time, they're in different locations. So he can't actually physically offer respect. So, any points?
Speaker quoting that conversation between Yudhishthira Maharaj and Yaksha. You know how everyone, all the other brothers were poisoned, and Yaksha asked some questions. And one of the questions Yaksha asked him was, how does one become wise in this world? And Yudhishthira Maharaj says, by serving the elders and respecting and serving the elders. That's how wisdom comes.
That's how we become wise?
Yes. How does one become wise?
What was the Sanskrit, do you know?
Or wise?
Not there. It'd be interesting to see what the Sanskrit is.
So the speaker was talking about Vedic culture, and he was saying that we are seeing that in Kali Yuga this aspect of Vedic culture is on the decline. Respecting, offering respects to superiors and serving them, because most of the time children don't stay with their parents, so then there's the opportunity to serve the parents in their old age. And because they don't stay with them, then that wisdom is not passed on by the earlier generation to the next generation. So that is how we were referring to that conversation.
Yeah, it's all deteriorating quickly. in Kali Yuga. Our kids don't listen to us anymore. I don't know if you had that experience. I'm going through a whole Leela with my daughter at the moment. She's 13, so it's like a whole pastime manifesting. They get to this age and they just changes, like, right there. So we're working out the dynamics at this point in time. Interesting. Because as a parent, you can never let the child have the upper hand. But at the same time, these days, the way you've got to deal with the kids, it's so you've got to be like a, I don't know what you call it, but like, it's almost like you've got to walk on a tightrope or something. You gotta, like, you know, continuously, like, you know, like that. It's very challenging these days. But at the same time, you always have to maintain the upper hand. If they get the upper hand, the whole dynamic becomes destroyed in the relationships. Especially because they go to school and then the superiors of the school, they tell them the opposite almost. Like, you know, you don't have to listen to your parents and stuff. It's like very difficult now. Any other points?
Brinda was just telling us on the way coming up here.
Who is that?
Brinda.
Brinda.
She's saying that
Brinda Maharani Ki. Jai.
The students at their school.
Yeah.
They don't even call their teacher with Mrs. something or Mr. Even their parents now, they call them by name. So.
Yeah. Becoming common. Yeah. Yeah, it's very, very different to these ancient cultures where you'd never. Never do that. Okay. Overjoyed to hear that Balaram, their dearmost friend, had come, they first honored Uddhava and then went forth to meet the Lord, carrying auspicious offerings in their hand. Raji, what do you read them?
In Krishna, Srila Prabhupada writes, the leaders of the Kuru dynasty, especially Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana, were very joyful because they knew very well that Lord Balaram was a great well-wisher of their family. There were no bounds to their joy on hearing the news, and so immediately they welcomed Uddhava. In order to properly receive Lord Balaram, they all took in their hands auspicious paraphernalia for his reception, and went to see him outside the city door.
Any points? So they were very excited to see Lord Balaram. But some of them would not be feeling the same towards Krishna. So this shows that generally in this world, people see in duality, friends and enemies. Krishna says this in Gita, that one who is conditioned sees things in terms of hot and cold, happiness and distress, victory and defeat, friends, enemies. These are all dualities in the world. Factually speaking, no one's a friend, no one's an enemy. Sometimes I see even devotees fighting over children. It's my child and then your child and then everyone stops talking to each other and there's a whole fight because of the kids. It even happened to me and with my daughter, one of the other devotee kids, and then there was some difference. And once again, I saw a conflict arising, so I just tried to avoid it. But the other parents got very upset and then it became like a whole, you know, like conflict which arose. And this is just because of duality. Yeah, because factually speaking, according to the, if we want to be factual, realistic, it's not your daughter, it's not your son, according to, you know, spiritual terms. All right, it's just two material bodies. This soul happens to be in the body of your child, and the other soul happens to be in the body of someone else's child. I mean, that's spiritual vision, if we want to go to the highest level. So why are we going to argue in conflict? This whole concept of friends and enemies is a material duality. If someone's your friend or someone is your enemy, that's material. That's a material concept. Because factually speaking, everyone is our friend. Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna himself says, no one is my friend, no one is my enemy. He says that in the Bhagavad Gita. That's how he sees things. But he says, if someone's my devotee, they're very dear to me. So that should be our consciousness. Right? Of course, none of us are on that level, but that should be the consciousness. Because Duryodhana was very enthusiastic, oh, Balaram is here. But if Krishna had have came, he probably wouldn't have even gone out. Right? When Krishna turns up later on, he tries to arrest him. And when Krishna comes to stop the battle of Kurukshetra, he tries to capture him. Well, Lord Balaram's his friend, so this is just material consciousness. This person's my friend, this person's my enemy, that's material consciousness. So we have to rise above that kind of mentality. And we should just be friendly towards everyone, actually speaking. That's one of the 26 qualities of a devotee, mitra. Mitra means friendly towards everyone. Sees everyone as a friend. One time the devotees said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, everyone likes you. And what did Prabhupada say?
I like everyone.
He said, yes, because I like everyone. That was Prabhupada's consciousness. Therefore, Prabhupada did not see anyone as not being a friend. He said, this person will go back to Godhead, that person will go back to Godhead. He said, everyone will go back to Godhead, except for Mr. Naya. Prabhupada said, because he was trying to take the land from Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was joking around. He will not go. Maybe he would not go immediately because there's some offense was there. But that is the consciousness. Prabhupada did not see in terms of duality. So we have to learn that consciousness, develop, cultivate that consciousness also. Any points?
Lord Balaram is extremely merciful. Even Duryodhana got the mercy from Lord Balaram.
Yeah.
Duryodhana was so offensive. He got Balaram's mercy.
Yeah. They approached Lord Balaram and worshipped him with gifts of cows and argya, as was fitting. Those among the Kurus who understood his true power bowed down to him, touching their heads to the ground. So, it doesn't say that everyone bowed down to Lord Balaram. So why is that? Why is it we don't always bow down?
We don't know the power of the other person.
Yeah, we may not know their position, their power.
False ego.
False ego, yeah. Yeah. Ultimately, it's because of matsara. Matsara means envy. Yeah. Because we're envious. Even one time, one of Prabhupada's disciples said, Prabhupada, I don't always feel like bowing down before you. He said that honestly to Prabhupada. I don't always feel like bowing down. Prabhupada said, do it anyway and the feeling will come. That's sadhana. Sadhana means we do it anyway and gradually our feelings will come. Serve Krishna. Okay, you don't feel like finishing your rounds? Do it anyway. I'll finish your rounds. And then the taste will come for chanting. If you don't finish your rounds, the taste will never come. Okay, at the moment maybe it's sadhana. At the moment, maybe you have to bow down. Maybe sometimes you don't feel like doing it, but it's mechanical. But still, you have to do it and develop that mood and then overcome the envy. Because here, it says that not everyone bowed down before Balaram. And the only reason they didn't bow down because they were envious of Balaram. So they would not offer proper respect. No? But some people understood him as he actually was. Prabhupada explains this, that when Krishna and Balaram were here on earth, not everyone saw them as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, because they didn't have the vision, the spiritual vision. Because if you have materialistic vision, you can see Krishna, but you don't know that he is supreme. You don't know his transcendental position. Just like when you see the deities. Everyone sees the deities differently. A materialist will see them, he'll just see them as statues, no life. But for a devotee, there's so much life in the deity. Just like yesterday we saw as Radharani's appearance, it was Radhashtami. So, you know, I wasn't here, I didn't get to see them yesterday. I stayed at the farm, we had a small festival at the farm. But, you know, most of you saw her yesterday. So you see, there's so much life, right? And the more you become Krishna conscious, then the more the deity reciprocates. To the point where in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it says the deity will walk and talk. You actually see the deity, you can have reciprocation with the deity. Just like, you know, the famous pastime of Baladev Vijabhushana. So you know that pastime. Where Govindadev, the deity in Jayapur, he spoke the Govinda Bhasha, right? And then he wrote that down, that commentary. Prabhupada says in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, I dedicate this commentary to Baladev Vijabhushana. Prabhupada says that. Who so nicely presented the Govinda Bhasha. So that is the position. When you become Krishna conscious, the deity can directly reciprocate. So Prabhupada says when Krishna and Balaram were here on earth, not everyone could understand their position. So even here, not everyone is bowing down before Balaram, even though he's right there, but they can't understand. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Some of them do. So, any points?
What kind of knowledge these people are having if they cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead? They are such great fighters, they have so many powers. Which power is conquering them then? Just to see the Lord, if they cannot identify who is the Lord.
Because they still have envy within their consciousness. Unless you have bhakti. Bhakja mam abhijanati yavanyashasmi tatvata.
I have a fear, Prabhu. You know, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj said, act in such a way that Lord comes and sees you. You don't go and see the Lord. But sometimes it scares me. If you say the same thing to a Mayavadi, they feel that God is everywhere. And they don't even want to. You know, most of the people whom I met, Mayavadi, they say, why you people always go to temple? There is a statement that Lord is everywhere. So you people are fools. You cannot see God everywhere. How do we contradict that? Because I read in Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada says the same thing.
Yeah, so Prabhupada says that if God is everywhere, then He's in the temple. So you should go into the temple and see the deity. So.
Then that leads to conflict, Prabhu, because people will ask you, why can't you see here? What is that vision that you lack?
We see Krishna everywhere, but we also see Him in the temple. And He's personally present in the temple. That's the point. So, you know, we see Krishna everywhere, but we have to see Him specifically in the temple. That's all. That's not a fault on behalf of the devotee. Okay. They approached Lord Balaram and worshipped him. Did I just read that?
20.
Number 20. After both parties had heard that their relatives were doing well and both had inquired into each other's welfare and health, Lord Balaram forthrightly spoke to the Kurus as follows. So now Lord Balaram is about to instruct them. This is a necessary part of relationships. Because first of all, they exchanged pleasantries. But unfortunately, many of the relationships we experience in our lives these days just stay on that level. I don't know if you experience that. Everything's just relationships is very much superficial pleasantries like that. But you can't subsist on that. You know, just, you know, it's not, even you meet devotees, it's like, Prabhuji, how are you? I'm good. How is your health? It's good. It's like, if it doesn't go beyond that, it becomes a little monotonous, especially for the 50th time. You know, it needs to become a little bit deeper. You know, actually exchange something of merit, you know, share some realizations or something deeper in Krishna consciousness. You know? So, Lord Balaram, I mean, the superficialities have taken place, but someone who really cares about you and someone who really is a real friend, they'll speak what needs to be spoken. So Lord Balaram is about to speak what is needs to be spoken. Now, he's not going to deal with superficialities. You know, that's all done. You know, how are you? I'm good. How's the family? How's the Yadus? How are the Kauravas? How's everyone feeling? Is your health good? Everyone's good? Okay. Now, let's get down to the actual... There's a problem here. So now let's deal with this problem. So yet, and this is a sign of when someone actually cares about someone, then they'll speak just very openly and very frankly and very honestly. And that's how relationships are cultivated. When you can speak to each other about significant things. And you can exchange things which are significant and important. And sometimes you even have to say things which are not completely pleasant. Right? And that's good, because that means the relationship gets deeper. You know, you don't want to hear superficial things, because then you can't progress in your own spiritual life. So we need to hear things which are more significant. So Lord Balaram is about to say things which may appear to be a little unpleasant. So, any points?
Well, I just wanted to ask a question.
Yes, sir.
You mentioned when Lord Balaram came, there were very pleasant exchanges were happening, but if Krishna would have come, it would have been different.
For some of them, yeah.
Yeah. So I was just thinking about the pastime where Jarasandha, he was worshipping, I think, Vishnu Narayan, but when he saw Krishna, he didn't want to. Actually, he was thinking of him as an enemy. Why does these things happen? I mean, other Vishnu Tattvas, when you see Lord Balaram, they're very pleasant, but when they see Krishna, they become different.
What's the example?
So the example was, Jarasandha was worshipping, I think, Vishnu or Narayan.
So he could kill Krishna?
Yeah, but he said,
yeah, that means he wasn't understanding who Krishna was. Didn't understand. Krishna's appearance is different because he looks human. Whereas Narayan does not look like a human. So that's there is a difference between Krishna. And you know, there's things in Krishna's pastimes which are very human like. You know, and then people hear. You know, Shishupal was saying at the Rajasuya sacrifice in front of everyone, oh, we don't even know which caste he's from and all these things. So there's things about Krishna which are very human-like and you know may appear to be false, and then sometimes he's misunderstood. It's much harder to misunderstand Krishna than Lord Ramachandra or Lord Nrisimhadeva or Lord Narayan or something like that. Any other point?
Prabhu, I have another question related to the same question I want to extend what Prabhu has asked. In I don't know what to call Sri Sampradaya, where Ramanujacharya has come, why don't they know about Radharani?
The Sri Sampradaya?
In Sri Sampradaya, because they always think Lakshmi is great, I accept that, okay, let her be great. But they don't even know simple principle, they accept Krishna as God. How can God have a relationship with an ordinary woman like Radharani? How can they think she is an ordinary woman?
The Sri Sampradaya?
Yeah, mostly, every time, right, when I discuss, I'm not talking about devotees who come here, but most of the outside people when I met, right, they always ask me, who is Radharani? She's an ordinary woman.
Just means they're not educated properly, that's all. It means they're not studying the Srimad Bhagavatam or hearing the Bhagavatam. Because the Bhagavatam clearly describes all these things.
About Radharani, only in Bhagavatam it is spoken or in other place, in any other scriptures?
Many other places. Brahma Vaivarta Purana, I think Padma Purana.
But they read those books now, Prabhu. Why don't they relate to the same thing?
I don't know. You have to. I'm not sure. But, you know, it just means she's not being emphasized or taught properly by their gurus. Or, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what that. I don't have a lot of experience. Okay. Lord Balaram said, King Ugrasen is our master and the ruler of kings. With undivided attention, you should hear what he has ordered you to do, and then you should do it at once. That's a very powerful statement. It's a very powerful statement. It's particularly significant because you're speaking to the emperors. It's not like just an ordinary Kshatriya dynasty. This is the emperor of the earth at this point in time. I mean, the Kuru dynasty is in charge. Everyone else is subordinate at this point in time to the Kuru dynasty. So you're walking into their capital and then you're saying you should be listening to King Ugrasen. Like that. It's very, very bold. That's a very powerful statement. Now, of course, everything Balaram is saying is correct because the prowess of the Yadu dynasty surpasses the prowess of the Kuru dynasty because they defeated Indra, right, on more than one occasion. The Parijata tree has been taken from heaven and it's in Dwarka. The Sudama assembly house was taken by the Yadus. They went up to Swaga, took the assembly house, took it back down to Dwarka and put it there so that Krishna can use it. So actually they are superior and they have more power, more potency. But they're not the emperors. So it's a very powerful statement. But the point is, if someone has potency, they must be respected. Just like when you deal with devotees, you know, there's many, like if someone's a sannyasi or like that, we offer respect because, you know, it's superior ashram. And then if someone's, I mean, now it's not so much there in Kali Yuga, but if someone's a brahmana, you know, and you're in a lower vana, then you offer respect. If someone's older than you, now you offer respect because they're senior in age. Right? So there's different ways that we offer respect. But what overrides everything else is if someone is spiritually advanced, then we offer respect to that person. And what's the one of the most prominent lessons that we saw that in the Bhagavatam itself? Yeah, Sukadeva Goswami. Right, Sukadeva Goswami, when he walked in, he was 18 years old. All right. And there was very senior personalities there. Right? But when he walked in, everyone stood up and offered respect. Right? He was only an 18-year-old, and he was naked as well, which made it even more... You know, normally you would not respect a naked person. But he walked in, everyone offered respect. Right? And he was given the Vyasa-san. Right? And who was sitting in the audience? Narada, who is his? His father's spiritual master. And also his father himself was sitting there. The compiler of the Vedas himself was sitting there. But still they offered him the Vyasa-san. So it shows the spiritual... So if someone's very advanced, if there's prowess, then we should offer respect. That's the basic principle. So here, because the Yadus are more powerful, they should be offered respect. But the Kurus are seeing things from the material perspective.
At the same time, he should have offered respect to his father, right? Sukadeva Goswami should have also offered respect to his father.
He did. Yeah, he wouldn't have just got on the Vyasa-san. He would have offered respect and begged permission and then he got on. So. King Ugrasen has said, even though by irreligious means several of you defeated a single opponent who follows the religious code, still I am tolerating this for the sake of uniting, for the sake of unity among family members. So he's being very diplomatic in the way he is speaking. Uh, we also have to be very careful in the way that we address and speak to others, especially when there's a feeling of conflict arising. Be very careful. You know, sometimes I do this, you know, like there's a conflict arising and I'm a very forceful person by nature. Sometimes I just say very forceful things. It doesn't always work out so well. So we have to be a little bit careful sometimes, the way we present things, so that we keep the conflict down. Mm. So Balaram's choosing his words very carefully. He could be a lot more bold than the way he's speaking at this point in time. But he's being very diplomatic. So we should also be careful the way we speak. Upon hearing these words of Lord Baladev's, which were full of potency, courage and strength, and were appropriate to his transcendental power, the Kauravas became furious and spoke as follows. So they're very upset. Because Balaram has insulted them. So now they're going to challenge the Supreme Lord himself. So this shows their material consciousness, stupidity. So they've become contaminated. Krishna says in the Gita, lust, anger and greed are the three gateways to hellish life. So if you become contaminated by lust, by anger, like they are here, or greed, right, then your consciousness becomes contaminated. Right? And then it's very difficult to do the right thing and say the right thing. So unfortunately, because they're becoming angry now, you know, all hell will break loose. And anger is very detrimental. You see back in Canto 4 with the Daksha Yagya, everyone got angry and then everything turned inauspicious. So you have to always keep cool. Prabhupada said, for the brahmacharis, they have to print on their head, stamp on their head, stay cool. We're all brahmacharis. Bhaktisanta Saraswati Thakur said, Grihastha Brahmachari. All of us, because we're all Grihasthas, but we're brahmacharis. To stamp on our head, stay cool. Don't get worked up. And if you can learn this one lesson, then your spiritual life will be much more easy. Just stay cool, which means sattva good, means the mode of goodness. Then your life will be so much more, much less difficult. The Kuru noble said, oh, how amazing is this? The force of time is indeed insurmountable. A lowly shoe now wants to climb on the head that bears the royal crown. So now they're directly insulting the Yadus and Lord Balaram. You're like the shoes. You want to come up onto the head like the crown. Shakespeare also writes like this in one of his plays. He writes a similar line to this as well. So basically, this is pride. When you become proud, when you become puffed up, when you become full of yourself, you'll say anything. Just like Chanakya says, a goat will eat anything, right? And a madman will say anything. So when you become proud, you can say anything, right? And then you have to live with the consequences. Words are the cause of most of the troubles in this world. Wars are started because of words. Someone says something, and then whole wars. Just like in 1963, 61, 62, 63, around that time. Then there was the Cuban Missile Crisis. You're familiar with the history? America and Russia almost went to war in early 60s. Right? And it was if Kennedy and whoever the Russian president was at the time, if someone had just said the wrong thing at that time, then, but luckily everyone kept their head cool and they defused it. Otherwise, it almost turned into a world war again in the 60s. So this is, amongst devotees, you have to be very careful. Our words can completely cause problems, or our words can pacify everything. So you need to speak in the mode of goodness, control your speech. It is because these Vrishnis are bound to us by marital ties that we have granted them equality, allowing them to share our beds, seats, and meals. Indeed, it is we who have given them their royal thrones. Only because we looked the other way could they enjoy the pair of yak tail fans and the conch shell, white umbrella throne, and royal bed. So this is the bodily concept of life. You think you're superior to Krishna and his associates? So they should be bowing down and offering respect. But still they're thinking themselves superior just because of material designation. So that's why Prabhupada, the thing that he emphasized the most in his preaching, you are not the body. Because as long as you think you are the body, then you'll have some false conception of yourself. And as long as you have a false conception of yourself, then you cannot make advancement in Krishna consciousness.
Prabhu, who from the Kurus using these words, Prabhu? Who from the Kurus using these words?
It doesn't say specifically, but Duryodhana would probably say something like this. So. I don't know. It doesn't mention in the commentary.
Balaram is his spiritual master, right?
Not his spiritual master, but he taught him how to fight with a club. They're more like friends. More like friends. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah. Yeah.